Welcome to the Future Melbourne Committee meeting on Tuesday, the 5th of March 2019. It's meeting number 51, and we are opening the meeting at 5:30 a.m. I welcome councillors, management, and members of the public in attendance this evening. Welcome to Melbourne. On behalf of the City of Melbourne, I respectfully acknowledge the traditional owners of the land, the Boonwurrung and Woiwurrung Wurundjeri peoples of the Kulin Nation, and pay respect to their elders past and present. For the Kulin Nation, Melbourne has always been an important meeting place for events of social, educational, sporting and cultural significance. Today, we are proud to say that Melbourne is a significant gathering place for all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. I take this opportunity to notify members of the public that this meeting is being streamed live on the City of Melbourne's website. An audio and video recording will be published on our website by close of business tomorrow. Whilst we try to avoid filming members of the public during our proceedings this evening, there is a possibility that your image may be inadvertently captured by the live stream. So please be aware of this evening. The unconfirmed minutes of this meeting will also be available from the City of Melbourne's website as soon as practicable. Should you have any queries relating to the conduct of the meeting, the documentation or the submission process, please speak with a member of our business team after the meeting. I request that all mobile phones be turned to off or silent for the duration of the meeting. I note that the agenda tonight comprises three reports from management. Please note that item 6.3 will be discussed under the Prosperous City portfolio, not the International Engagement portfolio as published in the agenda. For noting tonight, apologies have been received from Deputy Lord Mayor Aaron Wood and also Councillor Jackie Watts. I advise members of the committee this evening and the public that where the committee makes a decision on the basis of fewer than six voting in favour of it, then the decision may be referred by a councillor to council for decision. Disclosures of conflicts of interest. If any councillor has either a direct or an indirect interest as defined in the Local Government Act 1989 in relation to a matter to be considered by the committee this evening, please disclose the type and nature of your interest prior to consideration of the item. We're now moving to confirmation of minutes of the previous meeting. I call on a councillor to move a resolution adopting the minutes of open meeting number 50 that was held on Tuesday the 19th of February 2019. We're off to a flying start this evening. Moved by Councillor Francis Gillie, seconded by Councillor Riley. Thank you, councillors. I'm now putting the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hand. It's unanimous, so I declare that motion carried. Thank you. Councillors, are there any items from the matters arising that you'd like to discuss at this point of the meeting? None? Thank you very much. Now, the following submissions have been received in accordance with the Council's Meeting Procedures Code, and I'm just going to go through them. In relation to Agenda Item 6.1, which is Ministerial Planning Referral TPM-2018-14, CW2 and CW3, Victoria Harbour, 945 to 981 Collins Street, Docklands. We've had requests to speak from Sarah Macklin, Urbis, Richard Weinman from Warren and Maloney, and Marnie. I'm going to get it even better next time. Need to get my glasses fixed. And Karen Wilson. Items of correspondence have also been received from Sarah Macklin, Richard Weinman and Karen Wilson. In relation to Agenda Item 6.2, which is Heritage Victoria Referral, HV-2019-16, which is 2 to 20 Swanston Street, Melbourne, otherwise known as Federation Square, there are requests to speak from Simon Thulis, Chris Thrum and Tanya Davidge from Citizens for Melbourne. More than 1,100 items of correspondence have been received. In relation to agenda item 6.3, which is proposed travel by Lord Mayor to Indonesia and China, May 2019, there's been a request to speak from Chris Thrum and an item of correspondence received from Chris Thrum. Now, before we keep going, were there any members of the public here this evening that put in a request to present, but I haven't read your name? Yes?
You're representing the team that
Oh, sorry, and your name is?
Michael Smith.
Michael Smith from Citizens for Melbourne?
Correct.
Michael Smith. Duly noted by our chair of that portfolio, Councillor Leppert. Thank you. Good. Well, it's time for public questions. In accordance with the Council's meeting procedures code, a 15-minute period is provided at the start of every meeting and at the end of every meeting for the public to ask questions. Questions should not be longer than 90 seconds, and they do need to be questions, not an opportunity to make submissions. I will ask anybody that starts to make a submission to stop and otherwise ask members of the public to keep to the 90 seconds, and we have a countdown clock here to keep us all in line. So if you do have questions this evening, could you please raise your hands now and we'll get your names and then we'll get underway. Thank you.
John Widmer.
Sorry, could you just say it again?
John Widmer.
John Widmer. Thank you. Any other members of the public for questions this evening? No. Well, John, welcome. Please come to the podium. And we're ready for you.
In light of the gangland murder in Stubb Street, and in light of the trouble that that particular venue has been in over a period of time, what is the council doing to make the residents of Kensington safe? Because houses are 100 metres in that particular location.
John, thank you for that question. I'm looking to see if we've got enough information beyond the general, I can see it, thank you very much, to be able to respond. So I'm going to call on Evan Council to come to the podium, and that's all right, and answer John's question. Thank you.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, through you. The unfortunate events over the weekend are obviously predominantly a matter for Victoria Police. There has been planning permit applications in relation to the site, as well as planning enforcement cases and action in relation to the site. Council officers are familiar with the site, and those cases are often scrutinised in detail and carefully managed. But in terms of illegal and behavioural issues on the premises and around the premises, Council does not have jurisdiction in relation to those matters.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Evan. Thank you for that. Councillor Pinder also has some
Thank
comments.
You, Lord Mayor. As Chair of People's City Portfolio, I assure you that safety, public safety is always top of my mind. I meet regularly with Inspector Craig Peel, John. He's from Melbourne East, but it is already on my agenda for my next catch-up with him, and I'll get some direction from him, but equally, he's very responsive, and I might even be in touch with you following that to see if he and all members might be able to come out and have a chat with some of the residents there. John, okay? I can't see you, but I know you can hear me. Thanks, Lord Mayor.
John, thanks for the question. Certainly an issue top of mind this week, and I know there are a number of members of the team and our executive, our councillors, who will have raised it this week and will be following up, so thank you very much. Just checking, no other questions? Good. All right, we're going to move on to reports from management, and I'm calling on Councillor Rees to assume the role of chair of the meeting in relation to the planning general portfolio.
Thank you very much, Lord Mayor. There is one report from management for consideration under the planning portfolio this evening. That's agenda item 6.1, Ministerial Planning Referral TPM 2018. 14 for CW2 and CW3, Victoria Harbour, 945 to 981 Collins Street, Docklands.
Councillor Rees, I'm declaring a conflict, and I'm actually seeking the indulgence of Councillor Leppard as well. At this point, I have a conflict by virtue of Section 78C as a result of a campaign donation, and to be efficient, I'm declaring that for both this item and item 6.2, and I'll come back when those items have been dealt with.
Okay. Thank you very much, Lord Mayor. This is a $300 million development in a very high-profile location in the city. So with the indulgence of councillors, I'm actually going to request that Jane Birmingham give us a presentation on the officer's position on this proposal.
Councillors, this is an application that has been referred from the Minister for Planning to Council for comment. The applicant is Lendlease, the architect is Warren and Marnie, and the owner is the Urban Renewal Authority Victoria. You can see the site here. It's seeking approval for two residential towers known as CW2 and CW3, and the first tower on this development, CW1, has already been constructed. As I said, the Minister is actually making a decision on this application and Council is being asked to provide comment. This shows, again, the development in context of the already approved CW1 development. The Victoria Harbour Development Plan was originally approved by the Minister in 2011, and the Collins Wharf addendum to the development plan was approved by the Minister in February 2017. It substantially changed the building typology along the wharf and converted it from a low-scale mixed-use development to more of a high-rise residential precinct. This is a good image of the proposal, and you can see the two key towers that we're considering tonight here. There's 659 apartments in total. There's car parking above ground. As part of this development, Lendlease are also delivering an extension of Collins Street and a park to the west, and Yarra Walk, which is a boardwalk along the Yarra River as well. One of the key principles that our urban design team have been working with the architect and the applicant about is getting a clear differentiation in form between the two towers. As you can see here, they appear quite similar, but there's some work being done by the architect, which I'm sure they'll talk to increase the differentiation between the two towers. As I touched on, the Yarra Walk is a public walkway that will be constructed to the front of the development, and these are the townhouse topology apartments that front onto that boardwalk. You can see here there's some larger communal entrances that will have gangways across to Yarra Walk, and there's also approximately 10 private individual access points proposed as well. This is an image of the community green that's also proposed to be delivered as part of this stage of the Collins Wharf development. It's a public space in the order of 1400 square metres that ultimately will be delivered back to council. And this is just an indication of, I guess, the scale of the two towers. There's probably about a 10% increase in the GFA above the development plan. And both these towers are in the order of 6 metres higher than what was envisaged in the 2017 development plan. Thank you, councillors.
Thank you, Officer Birmingham. Are there any questions? Councillor Pinder.
Just some clarity, Jane, with regards to the wharf. The water is clearly Crown water, I guess. The wharf itself, is that deemed to be Crown land? And then once this community green is developed and delivered to council, does that have a 99-year lifespan or lease. Can you just clarify for me?
Yes, Councillor. The ownership arrangements are quite complex. Yarra Walk will remain as Crown land with Council as committee of management. It's also envisaged that those... at this point, Council officers are only supporting the two communal entries from the building, and it's intended that those also will remain as Crown land managed by Council. The ability of those two entry points to remain appearing quite public is enhanced by the fact that they are large enough to have seating and public lighting, and there'd be no gating. It would simply be the building access point would be the security point. In terms of the park, my understanding is that that's just an ongoing arrangement. Council will remain responsible for the design, management and maintenance of that park.
Any further questions, Councillor Oak?
I had a question about the proposed green space that looks like it's going to have no sunlight. Is that what's covered in the conditions for support of the development under urban sustainability, where you're requesting like tree locations and hard and soft landscaping and species and the like? Is that referring to, because if that's the space that would be returned to the City of Melbourne, obviously in that image it looks like there's sun, but it's wedged between two massive towers that would probably not give us much sunlight.
It is located between the two towers, but the two tower forms either side of the park are actually they're the lower elements of the two developments, so they're in the order of about 50 metres high, whereas the larger elements of the tower are about 80 metres. This location has already been, I guess, predetermined through the approval of the development plan by the Minister, and Council's urban design and landscape departments will design it, taking into account the amount of sunlight that space might receive.
Any further questions from councillors? Councillor Riley?
Thank you. I'm still a little bit rattled on this green space. Is that a developer's contribution back to us?
Yes, Councillor, it will be. It was part of the master planning of that whole Collins Wharf precinct.
Jane, one of the recommendations in the officer's report is recommendation 1D is for the removal of access points, gate and doors and building services along the western boundary abutting the community park and internal changes to allow internal apartment access. Can you explain to us the reasons for that recommendation?
Yes, Councillor. The green space in the development plan is meant to have an area of about 1,400 square metres, which is a generous area, but it's still not large, and there's a high demand for open space in the city, and particularly in this precinct. The development plan at the moment shows a walkway, bike access and emergency vehicle access point along the western boundary of that space, and the development plan also shows an area of vegetation and trees along where those entry points would be. The concern from our parks people is if you then have individual pedestrian entries from here, that compromises the way that we can design that park. It potentially increases another walkway. So we have recommended that those entries be removed. There would still be public surveillance of the space because there are terraces from those townhouses facing to the park. But if the Minister were of a mind to approve the development as is, we'd be suggesting that there be an easement created along here, that the walkways and access points be consolidated, and then perhaps the open space be expanded to the west so that we get the full 1,400 square metre area.
Yeah. That was going to be my next question. Could an easement be used over that part of the community green or currently the tower to help ameliorate some of those challenges you've identified? All right, and just one further question from me, and it goes to the recommendation E, 1E, in the officer's report around the deletion of the private gangways along the southern boundary, two ramp bridges leading to and from Yarra Walk, Australia Walk, to be retained and remain as Crown land, and internal changes to allow internal apartment access. I'm not sure if you've got a picture that sort of illustrates this part of the development, because it's hard to follow unless you can sort of see a picture. Then it becomes quite easy to understand. Okay.
Okay, so this is Yarra Walk, which sits about 5 metres out from the building, and that being council's community management. These are the communal entrance points that have access onto Yarra Walk, and then these are the individual entrance points. It's not particularly clear in that, but that's the basic premise.
Okay, and why is the officer's report not supporting those private gangways?
I've had, the officers have had extensive discussions with our engineers, and again this afternoon. The primary reason is that the larger public entries can be seen as public. There's an opportunity to have public seating there, lighting. They're quite large, people could gather. But having the smaller gangways represents a maintenance issue potentially for council. Those structures will need to be fixed to both the building and to Yarra Walk. Our engineers have said that the walkways to the individual apartments are not completely out of the question, but they would need to have further discussions with Lendlease, particularly around perhaps having more lightweight structures rather than what appears to be sort of a concrete access point. So it's primarily a question of maintenance for the council. Even with the 173 agreement, there's concern that, you know, those boundaries between what is private and public can be blurred.
Okay. Oh, final question for Councillor Oak.
Sorry. I was surprised with the recommendation to support, but with a whole series of conditions, given in 2016 we resolved not to support, and this is even bigger with respect to density.
Yeah.
I understand the logic, because we often do it in our, you know, we do it in both ways on a different occasions. But just interested if you'd explain to me why you did end up providing support but with conditions rather than what we did last time, given this is a much bigger development.
Okay, Councillor. In terms of the development plan, I suppose officers, although the FMC did not support what was put before us at the end of 2016, the Minister ultimately did approve the development plan, and this development has quite a high level of compliance with that development plan. It is doing a lot of positive things, and there's a lot of great aspects to the proposal. We feel that the minor concerns or variations from the development plan can be dealt with through condition, and that's what we're suggesting that Council recommend to the Minister. So reduction in height, reduction in GFA, they're things that can quite easily be conditioned. The same with removal of gangways, it's a clear outcome.
Thanks.
Thank you for that, Jane. Plenty of questions on this proposal this evening. Appreciate you briefing us on that. I now call on Karen Wilson, who requested the opportunity to address the committee in relation to this matter, to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Welcome to Town Hall, Karen.
Hello, everybody. This is not my realm at all, and I don't want to be here. I trusted that the processes would make a truthful decision for Melbourne. I have a vested interest. I live opposite Collins 2 and 3. I represent the Owners Committee, although they don't know that because this all happened so quickly today. I used to think where we live is Melbourne's best kept secret, but I tend to think that this proposal actually is. When I saw the original design in 2010, which you've all seen, obviously that one with the low walls and things, the 35-metre linear development, gorgeous, no trouble at all. Then when I saw just before Richard Wynne was looking at changing it in 2017, I couldn't believe we could go from that to what he was proposing. So I, in my limited resources, tried to do something, contacted Richard Wynne, contacted, Eddie McGuire, contacted Sally Capp eventually, different people. And, it's hard to get traction. I'm busy, I've got kids, I've got sicker, blah, blah. So that all just happened quickly. So I understand here we are at the 11th hour, and I understand $300 million and, you could fill this room with documents and all the rest of it. But it's happened before at the 11th hour in Sydney when they were looking to develop between Circular Quay and the Opera House. It took the Prime Minister of the day, Paul Keating, to get involved to overturn that decision, which would have, really gone to a much higher level than a blight on on Sydney. So it can happen. Our project director, Lend-Lease, Claire Johnston, said in 14, you create a complete experience by working harder and you've got to believe it's the right thing to do. I'm certain this is the right thing to do for Lend-Lease, but my question to Minister Wynne, if he was here, is this the right thing to do for Melbourne? I'm quite certain most Melbourne people don't know that this has happened and certainly don't know that it's about to go into this 85, 90 plus metres. Clause 20-18 of urban design within Docklands, I mean, just small points you look at. Inshore development is focused on the water. Significant maritime history in this area, we know that. Go down on the Sunday, sailing, dragon boats, Almadope Hill. What they're planning to do, Lend-Lease, it's just a token gesture towards maritime history. All of this is just playing around the edges, in my view, and I would think your average person in Melbourne would agree with such a thing. Lord Sally Catt, Mayor, I contacted her and she was very open to the whole thing, and told me to contact Wynne, she platformed on Docklands community and the waterways. Community and the waterways. I live in Docklands, okay. How am I going to live in Docklands when there's a great wall between the one side of Docklands and the other? You really need to read the zone to Port Melbourne, where I live. There's no dialogue between the two. In terms of waterways, you've only got to go on a Sunday now. The Yarra people are really taking up the new boats. You know. All right. Last, can I just say...
Sorry, Karen, I'll ask you to conclude. Thank you very much for that. We always appreciate when our local residents come and speak at Town Hall. I'll now call on Sarah Macklin to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you, councillors. I'm talking on behalf of Lend-Lease tonight. Collins Wharf is one of the final pieces of the jigsaw puzzle of what is one of Australia's largest urban renewal stories. The precinct will substantially deliver significant new infrastructure, including the extension of Collins Wharf as well as the Yarra Promenade, and two significant open new spaces. The proposal for Collins Wharf 2 and 3 will deliver 659 new townhouses and dwellings. In many ways, the development will exceed the expectations set out in the 2017 development plan. It really focuses on creating a community down there. One of the strong focuses for Lend-Lease has been to create an owner-occupied community, and they've done this through inclusion of a large proportion of 3- and 4-bedroom dwellings. That's over 16% of stock, but more than 30% of the NLA will be focused on that sort of housing stock. Part of the differentiation is also the diversity of housing typology, which includes townhouses, two-level apartments, as well as apartment buildings. It also has a very high level of compliance with better apartment design standards and exceeds those requirements in some instances, including communal open space, which is essential. It has Lend-Lease's usual very high ESD standards of 5-star Green Star, which is committed. And there's a really strong focus on accessibility, well in excess of better apartment design standards and with voluntary industry standards as well. This has really been a really strong design journey with Melbourne City Council and their urban design team. We spent an additional 3 months during the application or the post-lodgement process working with the urban designers, and my colleague from Warren and Mahoney will talk about those design differentiations in more detail. Jane's touched on some of those in terms of the changes to the form to Collins Wharf 3. One of the areas that we do call upon, and in order to maintain project viability, we do ask for some flexibility around height and GFA. This is essential to deliver the project. And we do ask for some variation from the approved development plan. The development plan foresees or foreshadows some of this flexibility, and it says that GFA and height details are a guide only and are approximate until detailed planning is complete. For feasibility reasons, we're asking for some of that flexibility now. The development plan talks about variation in building height and tapering down to the Balti Bridge in height. Essentially, if you look at the bottom diagram there, you can see the heights of Collins Wharf 1 and then Collins Wharf 2 and 3. The heights aren't largely differentiations in terms of what you can see there. The height is about 1.5 levels, so one entire level, and the top level is only half a level. And the idea is that won't be seen from afar, and from a pedestrian streetscape scale, there are really large setbacks which diminish the experience from the public realm.
I'll have to ask you to conclude now. Thank you for that. All right, I now call on... I now call on Richard Wineman to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Welcome to Town Hall, Richard.
Good evening, everyone. It's my pleasure on behalf of Warren Marnie Architects to run through what has been about a year and a half of very diligent and hard work on this project to actually get to the outcome we have, but also working very closely with Council and the Department to actually modulate and differentiate the building forms. We understand the importance of Collins Street and the Wall Precinct in our design and the outcome of our design. We very carefully worked the ideas of grain, of context and of culture into this building. But important to note, we also acknowledge the importance of Collins Street and the modulation, the articulation of building forms on the street in doing that design. Not just a glass facade, but actually a textured and a heavily referenced design. We work closely with Council in terms of creating diversity. Our original competition-winning design was to identical buildings, and we worked very hard in terms of creating texture, movement, and a life to the building in the skyline. So CW2 is an inflected glass facade made up of several components of glazing topologies and used with solids and reflective elements. And CW3 is a more... vertical expression, grid light expression, expressing the geometries of Collins Street. I'll run through these very quickly because I've got to get through a lot of slides, but essentially CW2, again, inflected movements, movements in the skyline on a heavy podium base. And again, very important that we've set the tower forms back from the podium edge, the four-storey podium, but also articulated the top of the buildings. These are not just square shapes, these are moving shapes. It's not just a flat elevation. These are articulated elevations, and this is all about not just creating static forms in the skyline. We understand how important these buildings are in the context of the city and the entrance of the city across the Falls Bridge. So there we have a very important building, a solid base, tower forms slimmed down to their maximum, an articulated top of the building, again, slightly different readings along between both buildings, and a very strong four-storey podium that's been given over primarily to four-storey terrace houses. 29% of the NSA on this building is devoted to these terrace, three and four-bedroom terraces. Again, working closely with the urban planners to actually create further diversity in the elevation. Importantly, along the ground plane, also texture and articulation of the vertical four-storey expressions, clearly defined entries, north-facing Park Council Oak, just so you know. It does get a lot of sunlight. And you can see the gangways we talked about previously articulated. They're very slender elements. They're not huge elements. They actually do connect and not made out of concrete.
We'll ask you to conclude, Richard. Some nice pictures there. Thank you very much. All right. Look, as Chair of Planning, I propose to move the motion, which will appear on the screen shortly, which is being prepared by officers, and I'm looking to a councillor to second that. Thank you, Councillor Leppard. Let me begin by saying that I think there are a number of aspects to this development which are very, very welcome. First is Lendlease are a very well-recognised and developed with a great reputation in Melbourne who have done some terrific developments. So having Lendlease as a developer on such a high-profile location in this city is very much a welcome thing. I also think Warren and Marnie have done a good job of looked at a lot of your projects in New Zealand, and great to see that you're doing more work here in Melbourne. I also think that the setbacks of the towers and the podium is good design as well and will help with this development at the ground plane. And I think also particularly the use of mixed materials and the particularly the work you've done along the podium means that you won't get this sort of monotonous long stretch of development. It'll look good, and each individual dwelling will have its own character. And I particularly like the use of the three- and four-bedroom apartments taking up sort of 30% of the GFA on the site.
Was it 16?
16% of the apartments, 30% of the GFA.
49% of NSA.
Sorry. So having said that, there are a number of conditions which the officers are recommending related to the support for this project, and I want to speak to a couple of those and why in moving this recommendation I'm supportive of it. I guess probably the most substantive goes to height and massing on this site. And look, on this point, I must confess that I don't know why the city, Victoria, actually moved away from the development plan that was agreed for this site back in 2010. The original proposal was for, you know, a low-rise heritage shed-like development along Collins Wharf. That would have enabled Melburnians to sort of stand on Yarra's edge, look sort of north towards MAB and the north bank of Docklands. And that would have been a great water space, and it would have really made for, you know, it would have made Docklands be all that it can be. Nonetheless, we have, there is a new development plan that has been put in place that allows for residential type development at a vastly more significant height. It is what it is. I certainly welcome the fact that Lendlease are the developers on that site, but I'm certainly not minded towards allowing further development above the existing envelope. Another item in the conditions there goes to the private gangways over the water. And look, I do accept the argument of our engineers that there are engineering challenges with the private gangways meeting with the Yarra or Australia Walk. But I would hope that some of those issues certainly deserve further discussion between Lendlease and our officers as part of the submission going to DELWIP. And, I do think there's scope for further discussion on that, notwithstanding my support for the recommendation as it stands. I certainly accept the general principle that any structure over a waterway should, by definition, should be Crown land. So, you know, putting a gate on that private gangway, you know, I can see the arguments around privatisation of what would otherwise be Crown land, but I would hope that we can have a conversation between Lendlease and our officers around that. The other officer recommendation that I think deserves some further discussion is the point D, which goes to the removal of the access points, gate and doors and building services along the western boundary of, I think, what is CW3 into that community green. And I would hope that we could come to an agreement that, you know, perhaps allows for entrances out of the park, but doesn't compromise the city's planned development, which takes into account the light and also wants to make maximum use of that 1,400 square metres. I think I'll conclude my comments at that point. Councillor Leppert.
Thank you, Chair. I agree, I'm going to support this recommendation. The history is an interesting one, and I need to delineate my comments on the history to the question before us, but I think it's worth a few different takes on the history as well, because it explains why we'll be making this decision, I believe, tonight in an unhappy way. There was a lot of support for the 2010 development plan, but I believe the reasons for change was, first of all, that plan was not the most economical plan to the developer. There were very, very difficult engineering requirements with the way that the buildings themselves crept over the water. The new development plan has more of the buildings on top of the land proper whilst keeping the gangplank just for pedestrians. But of course, the biggest reason for the change in the development plan is that there's a dearth of strategic guidance in state or local policies about what the preferred shape of the city should be in Docklands. And so the reason the developer came back to change the master plan was because they could. Now, back in September 2016, Council has a considerable change to the master plan, and we did. It was recommended to us that we support it because there was not a clear strategic justification for knocking it back. But we unanimously resolved not to do that. One of those very rare occasions where we respected but politely disagreed with our outstanding planners. And the words you'll find on page 53 of 70 of the report are the words that we threw together, which talk exactly like one of our submitters has made the case to us today, that we should entertain higher density at the eastern end of the wharf, but the bill form should quickly step down to the water. That we need to better reflect the heritage of the wharf, keep more horizontal, lower-rise forms, not dissimilar to the 2010 development plan, and importantly, not boxing Victoria Harbour or divide the water with a tall, architecturally similar wall of buildings. Those are the words I drafted at the time, and we got full support for that. It looked at the time like the Minister was listening. There was a bit of a pause before he approved the development plan, but he did. I think that's unfortunate, but our task now is only, unfortunately, to decide whether or not the application before us fits with the endorsed development plan. It goes a little bit over, but it pretty much does. Obviously, the development plan was put in place by Lendlease and others when more testing had been done on the viability of the project. Obviously, a lot more profit has been built into the project as well, but what we're seeing before us today is very similar to what was put forward in the development plan in 2015 and 16, which was endorsed by the Minister in 2017. So the task before us is, does it comply? Look, it does, but we need to, I think, bring the built form back to the endorsed building envelope. There's not a case being made in my mind for even more built form above that building envelope, as the Chair has said. Obviously, that's consistent with this Council's form of views in 2016. But again, we're not going to re-prosecute the case as to what the master plan should be, although I think I've made my views very, very clear. The question is, does it comply? And I think it does, if you can pull back that built form and make a few other tweaks. And that brings me to the private gangways. Yes, they should be deleted. It's not just a matter of maintenance. I think the fact that the gates are abutting the Yarra's edge, the Yarra walk, means that it creates a bit more of a hostile environment for the public who are using Yarra Walk. There are locked gates, I think. Page 7 of 70 is the best view of this because it's from the top down. Yeah. You can see where the de facto private land begins. So that's the sort of thing. It's a unique environment. We don't normally have buildings approved that then encroach over a river into a public realm, which is a game plan. There's a few places on the north bank, but it's pretty rare in Victoria. So I don't want to set a bad precedent here, and I think that it is important that we fight that issue, and I think that the way that the conditions have been drafted means that it's quite clear that we don't want that to happen in spite of whatever conversations might occur after this day. Let me finally say that despite that envelope, the architects have actually done a pretty good job. I'd like to have seen much more variation between the buildings and the facades, but within the brief that they've been given, there's obviously a lot of fantastic work that has happened. Some of that's been influenced by our urban design team within the City of Melbourne, I understand, and also with DELP, so I can only commend a lot of that good work. But we should be approving it tonight because the master plan, which we might not agree with, does support it, subject to those changes.
Thank you very much, Councillor Leppard. Any other speakers for or against the motion? Councillor Francis Gilly.
So I'd like to speak against the motion. I think that there is...
Do you mean for supporting officers or not supporting
officers? Not supporting officers.
Okay.
I've not done that before. Because I think they're amazing and they were right and I know nothing about this. But actually, I at every level find this really upsetting. So... and I think there are some things, there's enough things in here, particularly actually the only thing really I can hang my hat on to oppose it, I'll get to at the end, which is the private walkways. But actually I do think the only thing that's of value is the podium. And that's because you are putting a huge barrier straight in the middle of the city, you are breaking up that waterway. I know we can't argue about that, but actually it really... You know, everything you think about a city and water, you'd look at the water and you'd say, why don't they put a railway right the way around Melbourne that stops people getting to the water? And then we all know that that's ridiculous. We know the city doesn't work. We know we can't actually get down to the front there because there's a railway that some stupid person put along the river. And now we're going to build an extension to that railway, which is a piece of building that goes right up to the water edge that actually will not. It effectively is not just a railway. You can't even go to the top of it. It's a great wall. Trump would be proud of it. So I really don't like it, and I actually think, you know, Lendlease's original plan was about, I think, having some vision for that place, and now it's actually about having some vision for the profits for its return on its investors. And so I actually find it really uncomfortable. But I can't. That's not enough, because as you so rightly said, we should agree with that. So I think the point then I'd say is, why are those little bridges? I'm going to come to the little bridges. Why are they there? What's that about? It's actually about the adoption of a public space. So the only way you can walk around there is on this walkway. And as you walk along that walkway, and if you're imagining you go down there at 6 o'clock with your grandson and you think, I'm going to take him fishing, and you're there fishing and he catches something, he knocks the head on that, there's going to be somebody that sat in there that paid their, you know, $1 million or $3 million for the house with their walkway, who's going to think that that's not appropriate to be seen while they're having dinner and not really what they want. This is public space, this is our river, this is our walking. To give somebody the right to walk out from their front door and feel, it's just, I know that people will be nervous about using that place because am I interrupting on somebody rich's private space? And you see it all around the world. And one of the beautiful things, I've only been here 20 years, about Melbourne, is you can walk down to St Kilda Beach and you can mostly walk right the way around this place and you can touch the water. It was not appropriated by rich people who built houses, and so everyone else has to stand back from it. This is appropriating it. And I know you have to put that walkway on there, but then you hook it with bits of private property and you say, that's mine and I'm allowed to walk to it. So that's why I'm saying no, because I think that's the overreach. But actually, I don't like it.
Thank you for that, Councillor Francis Gilley. Any other speakers for or against the proposal? All right. I might quickly exercise my prerogative as the Chair just to make some final closing points. On the point of the private gangways, they are actually joining what's known as Yarra Walk or Australia Walk to the apartments proper, so it's not actually impeding public passage along the waterfront.
It's private rights.
It's the pathway to the front door, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I just wanted to clarify that point before you cast your vote one way or the other. Okay. I would also say that, again, just returning to the facade and the overall architecture, which I think a very good job has been done by the architects, I would stress that on the remaining towers along that Collins Wharf, and we very much hope that there are more to come in the future, that there will be... that we'll remember that this is such an iconic location in the city, and we see that future developments along there are truly iconic and can feature on those postcards of Melbourne because of that waterfront view. On that note, I'll put the matter to a vote. All those in favour of the officer's recommendation, please raise your hand. All those opposed? Okay. I declare that carried. The motion, I should say. I do, of course. Okay, so the ayes I'll take as Councillor Leppett, Councillor Oak, Councillor Rees, Councillor Pinder, Councillor Riley, Councillor Lulu, and Councillor Louis. The nays, Councillor Francis Gilley. I now call on Councillor Leppett to assume the role of Chair for the meeting in relation to the Planning Heritage Portfolio.
Thank you, Councillor Rees. There's one report from management in this section, that is the Heritage Victoria referral for this event. In the interest of time, I propose to go straight to our first submitter, Simon Thewlis. You've got up to 3 minutes. Thank you very much. As a very experienced event producer, I think the heritage permit application should be opposed for the following reasons.
The permit application has not considered the enormous social heritage value of Fed Square as Melbourne's main public gathering and event space. The Apple Store's primary purpose is the retail brand activation. The reason for designing and constructing a completely new building is to create a large-scale physical representation of the Apple brand that will dominate the precinct and all activity within it. This is the use of the site that is without precedent. It is a use that is completely different to any previous commercial activity envisaged for Fed Square and is not in keeping with the civic and cultural charter. The BMW H, for example, didn't have a BMW logo anywhere. It's really no different to the advertising super site on the top of Young & Jackson's across the street. The permit application has not considered how the building of a completely branded Apple store on the square may significantly impact on Fed Square's role as Melbourne's main public gathering and event space, fundamentally changing the relationship with the people, and in turn, the significant impact this may have on its social heritage value. Nor has it considered how having a completely branded building may impact the many commercial and sponsored events that happen in Fed Square, and the likelihood that many of these events may no longer be able to be held at Fed Square due to brand conflicts. The 70 events a week that the Apple Store would hold that are described as being of a public benefit nature, i.e. non-commercial, would actually seem to be of a completely commercial nature and designed to drive long-term sales and profit for Apple, and are largely the same events as those already being held at existing Apple stores in Victoria. This is all on the Apple website. The Heritage Permit Application's economic analysis assumes that Apple will continue with its current exceptional level of success well into the future, even though iPhone sales flatlined and revenue declined, and with no major future products confirmed. So there's no certainty as at the projections of an additional 1.6 million visitors a year, and hence the additional revenue to Fed Square can actually be met in the medium to long term. No allowance has been made for the cost of the replacement of the Apple Store building at the end of the lease. As the building is a physical representation of the Apple brand, it would be necessary to rebuild all or most of the building at the end of the lease so that it could be used for other purposes. This cost is likely to completely outweigh the stated overall benefit from the project, so a large benefit to Apple and potentially none to the community. Fed Square is far too precious to give away.
Thank you very much. Perfectly timed. And thank you for the most comprehensive submission of the night. Any questions? Councillor Pinder.
Councillor Evans, I don't have a question, but I just want to commend Simon. It was a very interesting reading, great reading, and absolutely comprehensive. So thank you.
Fantastic.
Some great insights.
Thank you, Simon. I'll now call on Chris Drum to address the committee for up to 3 minutes. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Councillor Rowan Lippert, Lord Mayor, councillors, men and women of the Kulin Nation. I'd like to echo the sentiments that Simon expressed just before. That was most thoughtful and well-presented presentation that he gave to the committee. I think it should be noted that, like, when Monument Magazine presented all the submissions for this competition, it was about a competition to commemorate 100 years of Federation, and it was for a design of a square, a cohesive design that won the competition. Now, the architects, when they presented the design, the option was to have an extra year of building, which is like presented now in the square. Now, it should be noted that this year of building is part of a cohesive nature of the design of Federation Square. The proposed building is of a smaller scale, and it is not conducive to fitting in with the Federation Square as it stands. And as such, and it has been noted in the report, it is inappropriate for this type of building to be presented in the square. I'd like to thank the officers and the managers too for the work that they put into this report. And I support the recommendation from management as well in regards to this issue. I think we should note too that the architects, when the Western Shard was proposed to be demolished they are vehement and fully sincere that the Western Shard should not be demolished and that there was an integral part of Federation Square. Okay. Now, when they were arguing this point, they didn't mention it. Oh, by the way, the Western Shard's integral, but we think there's an option to demolish the Yarra building and we'll be looking at it in the future. When Braxy did sort of open up the Federation Square, he would have noted that Federation Square is a fully cohesive design. Yarra building should not be demolished, and I think it's appropriate that the recommendation from management says that this building should not be demolished. Federation Square is a square. Now, it doesn't need to be opened up. Now, I thank Councillor Leppard for the work that he's put in regards to this matter, Susie O'Brien and Dibony Reid as well, for catalysing the opposition to this Apple building. In conclusion, I thank the manager and the committee for their thoughts and sentiments in regards to this matter.
Thank you, Chris. Any questions for Chris? Thanks so much, Chris. We'll now hear from Michael Smith on behalf of Citizens for Melbourne. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, councillors. My name is Michael Smith. I'm an architect and a proud local resident. I speak on behalf of the Public Space Community Advocacy Group, Citizens for Melbourne. We're a voluntary association coordinating the Our City, Our Square campaign on behalf of all Victorians who have publicly expressed their opposition to the Andrew government's decision to replace Federation Square's Yarra building with an Apple store. Over 100,000 people have signed petitions against the Apple store at Federation Square, and of the over 1,100 submissions facilitated by our group into this council meeting today, over 400 of these have been essayed for the first time. We fully support the recommendation that the future Melbourne committee provide a copy of the management report to the Executive Director of Heritage Victoria and advise that the Melbourne City Council does not support the application for heritage permit. The Yarra building is an irreplaceable part of Australia's built-form heritage, and that allowing the demolition of the Yarra building will significantly undermine the heritage value of Federation Square. The proposed Apple store at Federation Square does not contribute to the character of the square. It has nothing to do with our city, our country, or our heritage, and has absolutely no connection with Federation or the Indigenous culture over whose land it will be built. It does not respond to the existing architecture of the square, nor to the design thinking that informed its original design. Although it is identified that the proposed Apple building will be smaller than the existing Yarra building, we argue that this does not matter. The upper floor of the proposed Apple building will encroach more than 3 metres further into the square than the existing facade of the Yarra building. There are no images included in the heritage permit application documents that show the store's effect on the square. The proposed store is designed as a standalone object and pays no respect to the heritage value of the square. In addition, the proposed building will act as a spatial billboard for the Apple brand in a place with minimal signage and no overt advertising and branding. Allowing an Apple store to be built in this location fundamentally changed the cultural and civic nature of the square, allowing retail to dominate its use and its form. This will negatively impact heritage value at Federation Square as a whole, architecturally, socially and culturally. Federation Square is more than the sum of its built parts. It's Victoria's most important civic and cultural public space, and Melbourne's town square. Is the background to news bulletins and broadcasts, the centrepiece for tourism advertising, has inspired the council's logo, and is featured on road signs on the outskirts of Melbourne. It is in many ways the physical manifestation of, and identity of what Melbourne is. In light of the heritage proceedings that are underway, the incompleteness of the heritage permit application documentation, the lack of heritage and economic analysis that understands the Yarra building in its broader context, we request that the future of Melbourne committee unconditionally reject the heritage permit application. In addition, we ask that the City of Melbourne go one step further and petition the state government to take over custodianship of Federation Square and protect it as our town square. Heritage is what matters, and heritage is what we pass on to our kids. Over 100,000 Victorians want our Fed Square to be passed on intact to the next generation as our iconic civic and cultural meeting place.
Thank you very much, Michael. Are there any questions for Michael? No, you can take a seat. Thank you for your 1,100 odd submissions. I'm going to move the motion as it appears on the screen, and I call for a councillor to second the motion. Thank you, Councillor Rees. Apologies, Councillor Francis Gillard. So as I said, there's been over 1,100 submissions asking us to support the officer's recommendation. There's one submission I should note that has asked us not to support the recommendation. Now, of course, it's not just a numbers game, but those numbers are pretty compelling. Obviously, Citizens for Melbourne's been behind many of the 1,100, and none of us are blind to the community sentiment that's been expressed over the last few days and shouted in our direction. So thank you, I suppose. So similar to the previous planning item, I just want to articulate what this isn't about before I explain why I'm going to support the recommendation. This isn't about whether or not there should be a Heritage Victoria listing, a VHR registration. That's a separate process, and we've said a lot about that at other times at this committee. This isn't about whether or not we want an Apple Store in Melbourne. That's not the subject of the heritage permit. I think it's good. Maybe not here, but I think it's perfectly fine. And it's not a proxy debate about our preferred management model of Federation Square. Now, over 1,100 submissions have requested that the City of Melbourne instigate changes to Federation Square management. That is a pretty impressive and serious thing that we should be taking consideration of. I'm happy to have that conversation, but not here at this time. I'm now going to focus on the heritage permit itself, but I think it's worth noting how many people have spoken up about that issue. So this is about one heritage permit application. And thinking within that framework, the most important thing actually isn't whether or not the heritage permit should be granted, it's whether or not it should have been accepted in the first place. Just like the planning permit that I commented on previously, if it was a mum and dad extension, the local council would knock it back because it was incomplete. This heritage permit application as well is completely undercooked. It's one of the most inadequate applications I think Heritage Victoria must have come across. So I'm a little bit surprised that they accepted it without pushing back and asking for a little bit more information. But they have, and they referred it to us for our opinion, and so now we can provide it. I think it's important that procedural issue is front and centre of why the heritage permit shouldn't be considered any further. So instead, what the officers have done is come up with a very straightforward submission about what our local heritage policy says about buildings of state significance, which this is because it's got interim protection under state law. And the heritage policy is very clear. We should resist demolition, and there are only incredibly rare cases where demolition would be supported. It's all on the front page. Clause 12 explains what our local heritage policy is in the planning scheme. All we can do in the context of all the other processes that are going on, including whether or not the Heritage Council lists the lists Federation Square on the state register in a permanent sense, and other processes, all we can do in this circumstance is to provide Heritage Victoria with information about how we'd interpret under local policy. Obviously, in other places and at other times, I've got plenty to say about whether or not this process should have been instigated by the Andrews government in the first place. People are pretty familiar with my position on that. But in this context, I think that the response to Heritage Victoria that's proposed to be given by our officers is the right one. Councillor Rees.
Thank you, Councillor Lippitt. I am also going to speak in support of the recommendation, but look, I probably get there, as is sometimes the way, by a slightly different path to your good self. Look, I actually do support an Apple store being located at Federation Square. Simon, I thought you wrote an excellent paper, but with greatest respect, I disagree. There's a reason why the management at Federation Square are crying out for an Apple store to go there. It's because their business model is really struggling at the moment, and they need the revenue and, the more importantly, the people that an Apple store would bring to Federation Square. And so I've always, I guess, been of the view that if it was done right, then an Apple store at Federation Square could actually work. It wouldn't, lead to the corporatisation of Federation Square. You could still very much be a public square, but it would be bigger and better and more sustainable by virtue of Apple's presence there. It is notable that when the Federation Square was first designed by Lab Architecture, by Jeff Kennett and Steve Brax way back when, it was originally envisaged that a Borders bookstore was going to go into that Yarra building. I think we also need to be realistic and say that the Yarra building has not worked out like it had been originally planned. There's been a number of tenants that have gone into that building over the years, and for various reasons it hasn't worked, whether it was sort of the racing museum, various galleries, and there's been some other people have a commercial go at that space, and they haven't been able to make it work. And so that what that leads me to conclude is that there is an argument there for repurposing that building, potentially redeveloping it in a way which is sensitive to the heritage, the heritage values of that building. A world-leading architects, Fosters, you know, probably the world's most awarded, you know, currently operating architects, have had two goes at coming up with a design for the Apple Store. And sadly, I think both attempts have fallen short. First of all, we got the Pizza Hut Pagoda, which I think shocked and reviled many Melburnians. Then we had the floating iPad, again, falling short of the mark, in my view. Because at the end of the day, I do accept the substance of the submission that whatever happens on the Yarra building site, we need to try and maintain that campus-style character that we've got at Federation Square. Importantly, I think, as Chris Thrum pointed out, we need to maintain the square. The Yarra building was put there with a purpose, and that was, and one of those purposes was to maintain the square. And also, most importantly for me, I've got to confess, I think we should keep that geometric design, that stonework pattern, which has become so iconic and, you know, a sort of motif for Melbourne, if you like. And so to see that completely removed from the building, I just think is something I could not come at. So making those few short points, I'm happy to support the recommendation.
Thank you, Councillor Rees. Any other councillors wish to contribute to the debate? Councillor Francisco.
I only want to contribute to get back on my original way of operating, which is to say I really support the management's recommendation on all things planning. But given some of the things that you've just said, I think I'd just like to put the other side of that, I think. I get that I think, so it's straightforward and I'm supporting it. However, it is about process too. And the reason there are 1,100 submissions, and thank you all for your submissions tonight, and particularly thank you to Citizens of Melbourne. I mean, you know, it's a shame that actually we couldn't have had this debate over the last year in this room, that you couldn't have come along and actually been speaking to people that could then make a decision and make a recommendation on your behalf, that you've actually had to form, to meet, to search for places to meet, to be able to do that, to actually support each other to make 1,100 submissions. And that, I don't know how many times we've had more than 1,000 submissions, but certainly it's rare. And so I really want to acknowledge you for giving place to that voice, because we've been unable to give place to that voice because of the way this has been undertaken. The other thing that I'd say is there's something about the business model that hasn't worked down there, and I get that, but maybe that's the cost of a board and a senior management team and a whole bunch of specific ways of costs of managing that integrated into a city with City Square may be different. So I think there's an opportunity, because you mentioned it and you talk about it, for us to consider that and look at that and think about whether we could work with the state to look at more cost-effective ways of doing that. But I also do agree with you that campus size is, it's really exciting. It is a square. It has become the centre of the city. It is where we meet. And I'm really grateful that we, keep considering it, keep coming back to it, and that that you guys have brought that voice to us in our consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Francis Gilley. Any other councillors wish to contribute? Councillor Lilo.
Thank you, Chair. And first and foremost, thank you to the 1,117 people who sent their email to our inbox. I thought it was just something I did something great, and they're telling me I was doing a great job, but no, it wasn't. And so when I look at this, and I really did struggle with this because I do agree that, I do acknowledge that the public consultation was never there, and that's the reason why we are here. And, you know, I'm actually one of the people who actually go, you know, my best body, and I actually did question about the public consultation because we are there to represent the people and to make decisions. But in this instance, it is crucial. Three things that's very key for me, and, you know, Councillor Francis-Gilley talked passionately about public space. You know, we're going to, you know, by building a new building, we're going to get 500 metres of extra space, open space to the city. And for me, that is quite a big number. And it just means that there will be more space for people to actually stand and more people to visit. As also Professor Bates stated that, you know, the building was actually for a commercial purpose, right? You know, I remember, you know, people say, you know, whatever's going to be there, it's going to be an ugly building and everything. But I remember the same thing when, you know, in 2002 when Federation Square came on, people just said it was ugly, it was strange, and nobody would ever like it. And yet here we are. And the third thing is, you know, in terms of, you know, we're saying, well, it's not, you know, we shouldn't allow commercialisation to public space. So what about the cafes? What about the restaurants? What about the shops that are there? You know, does that mean that we also get rid of them, right? Because that's kind of the approach that we're really taking. So, you know, when you're weighing up all these things, it's a hard thing. There is really, you know, this is a very difficult decision, but, you know, in light of all these things, but you know, we have to take these into consideration because it is quite crucial.
Thank you, Councillor Lilo. Any other councillors wish to contribute to the debate? No, in that case, Councillor Pinder.
I wanted to say that, you know, I've been at Federation Square, the Japanese festival, which attracts something like 40,000 people, Chinese New Year, that attracts another 12, 15,000, for the Indian festival, Diwali, that attracts 30,000. And it really is the nerve centre of our city. And I think all of the comments that we've made tonight are really, really valid. I, like Councillor Rees, am not opposed to an Apple store. But I read with great interest, Simon, your material and really relished it. And it gave me a new way of thinking as well. But I think, as Councillor Lewis said, this from the outset has not really been done well enough. And it would have been great if we, the City of Melbourne, we are there weekly, you know, speaking, engaging with people. It would have been fantastic if we were able to have a view. You know, I need to say that, you know, I wasn't here in 2017. However, it would have been fantastic to get these solid contributions from some very well-informed councillors. So that's it.
Thank you, Councillor Pinder. I'll now call the debate to a close. I will, and I'll put the motion to a vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. That is carried by Councillor Leppert, Oak, Rees, Pinder, Francis-Gilley, Riley and Louis. Those against is Councillor Lilo, so it is carried. That brings us to the end of the planning portfolio. I think we'll excuse Councillor Oak, and I'm now going to call on Councillor Louis to assume the role of Chair of the meeting in relation to the Prosperous City portfolio and to ask the Lord Mayor to return.
Speaker, Rich Sikwa Paul, Chris Thrum, who, you know, is also known to the people. 3 minutes, please.
Thank you, Councillor Kevin Lilley, Lord Mayor, councillors, men and women of the Kulin Nation. It's appropriate that we recognise that Melbourne is an international city, and it's appropriate that the Lord Mayor travels to Bandung, Jakarta, Indonesia, and to China as well to represent the City of Melbourne. I think it's worth noting too that it's appropriate that when the Lord Mayor and councillors travel overseas, they should have support from council officers. City of Melbourne is a team, and it's appropriate that the councillors and the Lord Mayor have full support from the City of Melbourne. Again, I can say that Councillor Kevin Lilley and Councillor Phil Liu have travelled to China on previous occasions, and this further strengthens and builds on our relationship with China. Our relationship with Indonesia is a very important one too. To understand better their culture and their social sort of activities. So this will further strengthen and make Melbourne a more prosperous, better and brighter city. And so I think it's appropriate that the Lord Mayor travels to Indonesia and China.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Chris. Any questions for Chris? Thank you, sir. Thank you again. And thank you for putting it very eloquently. Can I move the motion as is on the board? By call for a second. Thank you, Councillor Lu. Can I just briefly, first of all, I thank the Lord Mayor for taking the time in your very busy schedule to do this trip, because I think it's, as most people know, that throughout Southeast Asia, you get a trip or a visit only elevated when the head of the government, in this case, when the Lord Mayor or Mayor and Mayor meet together. And I think this, your agenda certainly ticks quite a number of boxes. Most importantly, it ticks the City of Melbourne's international strategy of doing business globally. It ticks our ASEAN engagement agenda, and most importantly, I also think that it ticks off the our business partner partnership arrangements with a number of the cities, particularly Jakarta, out of Indonesia, and for a junior visit. But I think most importantly, I think the return visit this time is certainly timed well from the former mayor of Bangun's visit last August. I think your time was probably fantastic. And in terms of the 40th anniversary of the sister-state relationship between Jiangsu and Victoria, and particularly as Melbourne has an economic agreement with Nanjing, the capital of Jiangsu province. So I think it's an opportune time to certainly refresh and reaffirm all our relationships, and particularly with Tianjin. Over the last few years, we've, especially with the new management, or the new mayor there now, I think it's an opportune time for our two mayors to meet and also move the relationship forward, particularly as we celebrate next year our 40th anniversary. So, Lord Mayor, thank you for doing the trip, and I'm looking forward to your report coming back. Councillor.
Thank you, Councillor Lilley, and I fully support that as well. And first of all, congratulations on your first trip as Lord Mayor overseas. As everyone knows, I'm very passionate about the fact that we're engaging with the international community, and even though we are a local government, but it's one that we are a capital city, and it's something that we need to engage, especially with Asia, a lot more. With Bandung, I think, you know, Indonesia is probably, Bandung and Jakarta, Indonesia is our closest neighbour, and it's something that, in terms of international students and also a lot of the cultural exchange, it is a partner that we, not only Melbourne but Australia values very deeply. In terms of the trip, and also the fact that the former mayor of Bandung visited us now, who's the governor of West Java, and I think it's appropriate that we return that courtesy that he paid us last year. In terms of China, I think it's pretty obvious Hong Kong, Guangzhou, which is the Greater Bay Area, which is those great economic opportunities there that which we can really unlock. We're a port city, and I think Hong Kong, Guangzhou is going to grow big in terms of what the Chinese government is planning to do around that area. Nanjing is 40 years at sister state anniversary with Victoria. It's one something that we pride ourselves very much on. I do note that we also have another sister state relationship with Sichuan and Chengdu as well. And finally, Tianjin, in 2020, we will be having a 40-year anniversary for sister-city relationship, and I think that's very crucial to set it up. But also, overall, in terms of China, this year is the 70th year anniversary of the founding of the People's Republic of China. So this year is actually really, really important in terms of driving the key policies and everything. And for us to visit and be able to engage in that is actually seen as a positive note. So I commend the Lord Mayor and look forward to the many opportunities that you'll be able to bring back.
Thank you, Councillor Liu. Eleni, firstly, Lord Mayor.
I think I should say something as well. Firstly, that if this is approved this evening, obviously I'll be absolutely thrilled and delighted to take my first trip as Lord Mayor and the opportunity to visit these cities and countries on behalf of the City of Melbourne, representing councillors. I thank our team as well. I know that we'll have a counterpart with me from our exec team, so that we can represent all aspects of our organisation. But thanks for all the thoughtfulness that's gone into putting this program together. I thank Kevin and Councillor Louis and Councillor Lilu for your comments so far, and note that that in addition to the general relationships that we'll be building, both government to government and government to business, that as has been mentioned, the timing in terms of 40 years sister state and in advance of a mega delegation and effort from the city next year for our sister city celebrations is an excellent opportunity, and the fact that there are a number of activities happening in both countries that can help us leverage sectors of interest to our business partners is going to be a good opportunity as well. In relation to Indonesia and who is now Governor Ridwan Kamil, the fact is he's made 5 trips to us here in Melbourne to learn from us and has shared as much as he can during that time, and his dedication to a number of themes that are very relevant to us, particularly around smart cities and the use of technology and digital applications to really bring efficiencies and engagement to the city, I think is really relevant, and I'm looking forward to being able to learn more by us being there and also to show that respect back to them as they have shown to us over time now. And of course, in the context of Indonesia being a very important market for Australia, Victoria and Melbourne in terms of proximity and scale. So I really look forward to that. And of course, an incredible program through China, almost a city a day, but it'll be well worth it in terms of the activities we can get involved in, the people to meet. And as I said, as a foreshadow to preparing for a fantastic program next year. But noting as well, in terms of the sister state efforts, this is a program that's very much supported in both Indonesia and China by the Victorian government. So looking forward to working with our colleagues there and also federal government agencies that are relevant, such as Austrade and DFAT, because these are particular moments in time in terms of the ability to celebrate our past but really set ourselves up for the future. I'm mindful, it's my first trip as Lord Mayor. I'm mindful that the government-to-government relationships are very important, but I'm really pleased as well that there's a big business focus in what we're undertaking, because I think we need to be focused on tangible outcomes that we can continue to deliver for the constituents and citizens right here in the City of Melbourne. So I'll be very invested and committed to making sure that we can pursue as many of those outcomes as possible as part of the trip. So thank you to the team for proposing this, and I'm looking forward to the vote.
Thank you, Lord. Any further speakers on this? In that case, could I put the motion to a vote? Was it in favour? Unanimously.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Well done.
Thank you, team. Can I now the Lord to the role chair will remain in the meeting.
Good, thanks, Councillor Louis. Well, this concludes reports from management for our meeting this evening. There are no items of general business, councillors, for consideration in open session. I am going to ask, are there any items of proposed urgent business at this point? None. Thank you very much. We do allow a 15-minute period at the end of the meeting as well for questions. Are there members of the public here still here? Who would like to ask a question at this point? There are none. Well, it leaves me to say thank you to my fellow councillors for chairing and being very engaged in the discussions this evening, and to members of the public for attending, even though most of you have left, but for everybody watching as well, and to staff for all of your support and preparation. Thanks for your interest and attendance. I am now declaring the meeting closed at 7:54 p.m. 6:54 p.m. Thank you.